Hi folks, and just before we start this podcast again, I need to ask you to try and help us keep this Tortoise Shack project going. How you do that is you join us on patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and for the price of a fancy cup of coffee or a cheap pint nowadays, you get tons of additional content. I mean tons. Not only do you get the podcast as quickly as I can turn them around, you also get them plea free, so you don't have to listen to me with these annoying interruptions, and it's all in one consolidated feed. So whether it's Reboot or Glow West or Policed or indeed an Echo Chamber or an upcoming Shrapnel, they all appear in the one feed, and you get them as quickly, as I said, as I can turn them around. It really helps us keep going. It means we don't have to rely on going looking for sponsors or worrying about who we're offending. And, you know, podcasting has become very corporate. Let's tell the truth here. There's a couple of big players there. And I know from my own experiences of talking to these people, in terms of the offers they've made to us, that it would mean we'd have to pull punches. We'd have to be corporately safe. And the safe pair of hands phrase has been used a few times. And that's just not something that I think we're interested in as a platform and as a group of people who feel passionately about the work that we do. So if you believe in the work, if you want to support it, it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and it's the only way to keep this project going. Really appreciate it. Thanks for your time, and I'll let you enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and Martin continues to call in sick. I don't know how he gets away with it. He texts me and he just says, I'm not up to it today yet. I've heard stories of him out in Donabate on paddle boards and all sorts of stuff. So he's taking advantage of this good weather that we have. And I would love to say I don't blame him, but I do. Anyway, long story short, I am thrilled to be rejoined on the podcast. It's been a while since I've been joined by West Cork TD for the Social Democrats, Holly Cairns. Holly, how are you?
I'm great, thanks, Tony. How are you?
Good. Look, we're all looking at the window thinking we're conflicted. We're looking at going, isn't the weather wonderful? And yet we're all going, this might be the coldest summer we have going forward. So there's that little bit, maybe I'm wrong, but too many people are embracing the basket at the moment. And I'm thinking maybe we're all this. And you might get a sense of that more so as someone who's, dedicated, how do I put this? You know your stuff when it comes to agriculture and farming and what something like this means. I wouldn't mind if you could. Does that trigger anything for you?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of when we see the wildfires across Europe at the moment and everything, it's bringing it home for a lot of people. And it's one of those really unfortunate realities kind of human nature that we sort of need to see and experience things in real terms to understand it and to then act on it. And it really shouldn't have taken, it shouldn't take experiencing it for us to take the relevant action. But unfortunately, that seems to be what's happening. Like the penny's still dropping with people over the recent weeks with this kind of extreme weather. But yeah,
I know. I agree. I agree with you. It's just. I know. It's just occurred to me when I look at it. I know the last time we spoke, you spoke passionately about some of the things about, you know, sustainable farming, agriculture, and I just think to myself, you know, there's large parts of Europe now that people are saying are going to be unarable, excuse me now, but anyway, I fluffed that, folks, don't worry about it, but this is where we're going. And when you see it like that, and it's playing out in front of our eyes, but we all go, but isn't it lovely, you know, put some sun cream on and drink a few bottles of water. It is a strange situation.
And then simultaneously, like all of that's going on, and like you say, large portions of the world will become completely uninhabitable. We'll have mass immigration, food shortages, droughts, you name it, like the unthinkable. And then meanwhile, in Irish politics, you have the government unable to reach its sectoral ceiling targets because they're too busy trying to plumose farmers and, you know, put off the inevitable. That's, you know, those two parallels are kind of stark.
Yeah. And I want to go there, actually. This was the premise, because the term is finished. They've left. It was quite funny. It was the definition of cognitive dissonance, a vote of confidence in how well they'd done. And they all took to social media to say, this is backfired. We're telling everybody. And they have a huge majority. Like they have a huge majority between a mix. But they also then had to wake up the next morning and find out they were deeply unpopular, deeply unpopular. You're a first time TD now, and you've seen how it works and how it doesn't work. What's your sense of this government, and are they actually, it's thrown at them a lot that they are out of touch and not actually in understanding what's happening on the ground. Is that, what's your assessment now based on the last couple of years, Holly?
Yeah, like on the whole, in terms of this government and the recent no confidence motion, I voted no confidence for several reasons. And I suppose I'll just give some quick bullet points. Like, I have no confidence in their housing policy. In some parts of the country, rents have hit, you know, an increase of 75%, and house prices have grown more than 12% in the last year alone. I don't have confidence in their ability to tackle the climate crisis, we briefly just touched on. Mm-hmm. But somehow or other, they've managed to plant less trees since the Greens went into government. And they don't seem to have the kind of, I suppose it's, I don't know if we could even call it bravery, because it really should be the bare minimum to commit to reducing our emissions in every sector. I don't have confidence in their ability to fix our healthcare service. We're at waiting lists of over a million people now. And I don't have confidence in their disability policies, which I know we're going to touch on later.
Oh, we'll definitely get into that. Yeah.
On the whole, I just don't have confidence in their approach to governance. And I think, like, we're talking about them being out of touch and all this stuff. Like, my take on it, and since before I went into politics, was like, from somebody just looking in at it, I always felt like, wouldn't it be so nice if your politician said, like, what needs to be said rather than what they kind of think that you want to hear? And this is a really good example of saying, no, we don't want to reduce emissions by 30% in the agriculture sector, because they're like promoting farmers, but ultimately it seems to me like they just don't have any respect for farmers' intelligence. Like, farmers are not stupid. We know we have to reduce emissions. It's just this kind of approach to politics that's like, oh, what way is the wind blowing? And I'll just say that and hope that that keeps me in my seat. This kind of short-termism is so detrimental to our policymaking. And it's just become so clear now, because every sector, every department is kind of just unraveling like that. The health service, all the short-termism there, nobody ever having the kind of wherewithal to just tackle it and to introduce a public health service, the obvious answer. It's the same with housing. Nobody's just doing the things. They're looking at the next day, the next week, the next election, always. And actually, they're underestimating the electorate. People want policies for the next generation now. And I think that's, when I say like out of touch, that's what I mean. It's like the whole bigger picture they're out of touch with. I think they're in touch with their people they see in the shop who are like, the price of petrol, we can't, you know, because like we all experience that, and it's so hard for people. Like, that if there was a long-term plan, these things would be addressed rather than waiting until we absolutely have to take action and then it falls so unfairly on people who are already disadvantaged.
It's a very interesting point you make, that we have this, we're trapped in this cycle that, you know, especially, and I think it's unique to this particular government, because they're now looking at, you know, in the run up to the December, where they're going to switch it around, you know. And I put it to you that the public who are already annoyed will be even more put out if they see this, you know, this put as an idea of, now, well, now you get a turn. And we already think they're playing silly buggers with it as it is. It doesn't seem to be well thought out, this idea that, you know, this guy will be benched, that guy will become a minister, he'll become a super junior, she'll become a minister for state, and I'm going to get my turn as Taoiseach and you go back as Tánaiste. Are they oblivious to people's, like, looking at this going, are you for real? I want to be able to pay for my creche. I want to be able to actually, you know, know that my children are on a waiting list is going to be actually seen and not get received. And I say this from personal experience, receive a letter every few months that says, do you want to stay on the waiting list? It's nothing worse than getting that letter going, please confirm you want to stay on the waiting list, as opposed to actually bloody, here's your appointment. It's so fucking frustrating. Excuse my language.
Yeah. And actually on the cabinet reshuffle bit, I have to say my mind is blown by this, just because I presumed there would be no reshuffle. Because just to kind of explain why, for me, like, I just got elected in the last election. And I mean, honestly, trying to figure out just how committees work, how the different stages of legislation work, what, you know, all the different kind of moving parts in the Houses of Bureaucracy, right? So it was a brand new TD. And then there was other brand new TDs going into ministerial positions. So, like, as an example, and because I'm on the Children's Committee and I kind of cover all of those topics, Roderick O'Gorman is an example of that, the Minister for Children, first time TD going into a ministerial position. Like, I just don't know how you could know how to kind of go about that. And then, you know, we're 2 years in, you might be kind of getting to grips with it, figuring out the crack in your department, who's in charge of what, how do you do this, how do you get that, and then move them out into another department. Like, I just think, oh, what's the best way to get nothing done? Let's reshuffle the cabinet halfway through. So I just presumed that it would be like Leo out of Taoiseach, Micheál in. But I presumed that Micheál would probably prefer like foreign affairs and Coveney would go into enterprise and that would be that. I didn't think there would be this like big reshuffle. I can't get over it.
If there is, I put it to you that they'd love it to happen. But I think this, look, these are the conversations that are going to start to happen now between now and that period. But if I can focus on Roderick O'Gorman for a moment. We saw how that played out, his inexperience, whereby he quoted things that were shown, and you were very, very much to the fore on this, where he quoted, you know, advice that he'd received that was over a decade old when it came to certain situations. And it just didn't hold up. It didn't stack up. Law had superseded everything he'd said. And we saw how his, you know, what his advisors had told him, X is, you know, water is wet, when in fact there was no water in the glass at all. And we saw, and he's made several statements that just didn't bear out, and he's had to, I'd like to say row back, but I almost actually say they've represented some of them as a win now, you know. And look, we'll come to it in a minute, but that you're right on that, particularly around that inexperience, because they often say that while a minister gets elected, the permanent government continues to govern. And there is that attitude. And you've seen that as you go to committees and you think you're trying to influence things, and yet it doesn't actually happen. How has that experience been?
It's really eye-opening seeing, like, for one, how much time is spent on committees. And I say that, like, some TDs do not turn up to committees. But if you go to all of your committee meetings and you go through the process of, like, a piece of legislation from start to finish, really interesting. And the general public don't see that, because you can watch committees, the public ones, but the private committees as well.
They get upset if you mention private committees, I can tell you from experience.
Yeah, true that. But really, we just think it's the dole in action, or that's what I thought before I went into politics. And there's a kind of a new process of the pre-legislative scrutiny, which I think is really good. So basically, for example, we were going through legislation around mother and baby homes. We have affected people, we have experts, advocates, legal advice, all of these different people come in and give evidence and information to the committee. And then when we have a bit of draft legislation from the ministers the department, then we use that information from the public sessions to make a report on the legislation and how it should be improved based on that feedback. So that to me is actually a really good process. It makes sense. You're, you know, getting the kind of knowledge and the experience from people and putting that into policy. And that's what it should be all about. So really good, really impressive. The amount of time we spend on that, I'm like, brilliant. That's how it should be. That's what we're elected to do, not to do like super councillor work. But then unfortunately, like the last crucial bit is missing in that those recommendations that the committees make, they're not taken on.
Holly, they're ignored quite often, frequently. Like if there's
completely,
like I've seen, yeah, we've seen so many. Like look at what's happened around the SHD, the strategic housing developments recently, and they just went, well, actually, yeah, we've been caught with our arses out the window on this. So what we'll do is we'll actually try and introduce a piece of legislation to make it harder to catch us doing what we wanted to do, as opposed to fixing it. I mean,
exactly,
it's and insane.
And then they routinely don't take on your amendments. So you'd spend loads of time like preparing all of these amendments to the legislation. This is after they've ignored the committee's report, by the way. Then you go into these other stages where, you know, opposition TDs can put forward amendments to legislation. You debate them at the committee and then you debate them in the Dáil. And all of them are routinely refused. And sometimes they might change a little bit in the Seanad, really, if they just feel like there's going to be enough public backlash. So, and actually take the opportunity to your listeners to say, like, you guys kind of making a fuss, for want of a better term, but a relevant one for what we're going to talk about later, makes a huge difference, because I could go into the Dáil and set myself on fire and they wouldn't even notice. But if the public were a bit behind me, then they take notice, because like we talked about earlier, like what way is the wind blowing? They want to see what the electorate are after, and then they kind of sometimes react to that because they don't want to lose their seats.
Yeah,
so it's really important when people, you know, speak up, share things online, amplify important causes.
Contact your TDs, folks, as well. I mean, we do this all the time, but we've seen it. Like Lynn Rowan has spoken time and time again about these going in, talking about amendments that need to happen from the Shannon, everybody nodding their heads and saying, yes, this is an excellent point, debating it, saying this is great and all the rest, and then going outside and finding out that it's just been completely ignored. And they're going to just do what they did, but they gave you your, sure didn't we give you your 7.5 minutes to talk it through. So we do need, I spoke to Catherine Connolly recently and she did say, perhaps a bit tongue in cheek, but she said democracy is a little bit of an imaginary thing, but it's the best it's the best thing we can think to come up with at the moment. You know, this is, you know, we have to believe in it. We have to actually believe in it to be there, even if we know that it doesn't actually fulfill the ideals that we probably think it does, when we're particularly Joe Public, when they're sitting down and they're going to go in every few years to tick that box in the ballot. They don't understand that's not actually exercising the power. There's a lot more things, a lot more levers being pulled. Let's come on to it. Let's come on to your work particularly around people with disabilities, your engagements with the minister, Roderick O'Gorman. I'm going to frame it in such a way as that long-term listeners be well aware that obviously Ireland was very late to the party when it came to enacting the UN's Rights for People with Disabilities Act. We were pretty much, I think, one of only two or three countries that were late to do it. And then when we did, we didn't actually bring in the optional protocol, which meant you could attest the right. I mean, that's like me saying, you know, I'm giving Holly, you now have the right to say that you're entitled to free education, but actually, if you challenge me, you don't have the right to challenge me. You know, you did. So we brought in the protocol at the years later. Like I think it was something like 8 years after we'd adopted the actual thing.
We still haven't ratified the option protocol.
There you go, folks. So I was talking to someone last weekend about it, and I understood it to be a little more advanced than that. So apologies to it. But there you go. So we haven't even ratified it. And as the special rapporteur, the UN special rapporteur, Lalani Farah, has said on this podcast several times, if you can't attest a right, you don't have it. Holly, can I ask you, where do we stand in this country when it comes to this issue? I mean, and then we may get into some of the issues around the current policies that this government are overseeing.
Yeah, so I think it's a really good way to frame it for listeners, that we were the last country to ratify the UN's CRPD, and we still haven't ratified the part that makes it like a legally binding thing. People have a right to live independently, seek employment, education, all of these things that, you know, a lot of us take for granted. And I know that, like, for me, when I'm looking at podcasts that I follow, sometimes if the topic is something you're not as interested in, you might be like, oh, I won't listen to it this week. But like, if you're concerned about human rights, this is something that will interest you. You know, I don't think we quite realize the amount of people that it impacts and how likely it is to impact us. So many people acquire a disability throughout their life. Oftentimes, as we grow older, we acquire disabilities. So this is, trust me, important to all of us. And at the moment, the figure we have is that there's 750,000 people with disabilities living in Ireland. And then, of course, there's their partners, their families, their carers, their communities, the amount of people that are impacted. And I suppose a lot of what I might talk about now is kind of different figures and stuff like that. But behind all of those figures are people who are, like, struggling isn't even the word. Oftentimes it's real, real suffering. So since being elected, it's one of the things that I find so difficult, like meeting families. A lot of the time it's parents. They have children with, you know, profound disabilities who can't get a place in school. They can't get respite. They can't get any therapies for their children. You know, things like speech and language therapy, physiotherapy. And so for these parents to even actually be able to leave the house to come to meet you, to explain this to you, is like quite the upheaval, quite the cost, all of these things. To kind of zoom out from that, like, so those individual cases, there's, in all of the EU, Ireland has the lowest employment rate for people with disabilities, just to kind of give an example of how bad a performer we are on this. 24% of people not able to work due to illness and disability are living in consistent poverty, compared to 6.7% of the rest of the population. And 39.1% of those not working due to a disability are at risk of poverty. That's over three times higher than the general population.
I want to caveat that for everybody. You have to understand that this is also, you know, Ireland has a huge at risk of poverty population without social transfers. So we have this thing where we have one of the worst market income inequality rates in the OECD. But if you bring into account, you know, social transfers, we kind of get up to mid-table. But we leave people with disabilities behind all the time. And those statistics are real people who are left behind, locked out of work, locked out of workplaces, locked out of dignity is how I'd put it, Holly.
You hit the nail on the head there. So I don't think there's another group in society who are so profoundly impacted by the decisions that are made in Leinster House. You know, it's the difference between being able to access healthcare or not, being able to get into employment or not, living in poverty or living with dignity, like you say. And the worst part is that those impacted have no say. You know, there's no representation of people with disabilities in the Dáil, as far as we know, and I think very little in the Shannon. And the figures, I suppose, speak for themselves. But, you know, I suppose the inaction is something that needs to be called out, because, you know, there's an added cost, obviously, of having a disability is one example. So there's, you know, between the department's own cost of disability review found that the additional cost of having a disability is anywhere between 8,000 and 12,300. But of course, that analysis was done pre this mad rise in inflation. So obviously it will have risen with that. So those people who are kind of already finding it so hard to live, like the disability allowance is €208 a week. And we know that even the pandemic unemployment payment was so much higher than that. And people with disabilities are really screaming that from the rooftops at the moment. We established how much you need to live on. How is the disability payment so much less? And then, like in the last budget, the department's own capacity review decided they needed €250 million to meet the unmet needs of disabilities. And then they allocated about €60 million. So there's never been any real attempt to address this situation. So we have this stark difference between like rhetoric that you hear for like government press releases, people like the plinth launching all of these reports about dignity, decongregation, all of these words. And then the reality is just the opposite of that. They tried to kind of rejig the whole system of children getting services, and it was called Progressing Disability Services. And they set up these children's disability network teams all over the country. Not one of those 91 teams are fully staffed. So there's children sitting, families on waiting lists deteriorating. And we know, of course, that early intervention is so important when it comes to disability. So people don't get that early intervention. That boat has sailed.
Yeah.
You know, there's no going back from that.
These are the ACEs we talk about, the adverse childhood experiences. And if you were born with a disability, a person with a disability, and the funding isn't there, the supports aren't there, the therapies aren't there, you're already at a disadvantage, and now you're being ruled out from participation in society. And like, I mean, I often think about it. We have this conversation around housing a lot, and we very seldom hear how much of this accommodation is disability accessible. It's very, very, very seldom spoken about. And when you see the numbers that, you know, that they, for example, I'll give you real examples where they push back on this, lower the standards from build to rent as opposed to build to sale. It meant they could actually lower the standards of the accommodation they were offering. And the majority of these planning permissions that we're seeing now are in that BTR model. And therefore, that even further excludes people with disabilities. But can I come to a really crucial I know I saw it on social media, and I don't think enough people picked up on it. But you were engaged with in a conversation with Minister O'Gorman, and he quoted this issue as if something in 2014. This was referring to previous thing in 2014, and that's no longer the case when it comes to Article 5. And you know, I'm sure if Jonas Ruskus was here, he would talk about X, Y, and Z. And I'm going to read it because you tweeted it. This is Jonas Ruskus himself. I recently became aware that remarks I made at the WCAC 2022 were being cited as evidence that Ireland's Assisted Decision-Making Capacity Act is fully compliant with Article 12 of the CRPD. This is not the case. I sent the letter to Roderick O'Gorman to clarify my position. It does strike me that it was, you know, I know you've said you want the Dáil record corrected, but it's just fundamentally wrong that this information was put out there into the public domain and put on such a way as that we believed that we were, I'm going to be kind to the minister and say he misinterpreted a previous statement, but it was really something that affects thousands of people right now. And it was profoundly wrong and it should be corrected, Holly.
So, yeah, and I'm just going to give your listeners a little bit of background on the Assisted Decision-Making Capacity Act, because I wouldn't have known what it was if I wasn't so engaged in the process of going through this legislation. But essentially, a few months ago, a couple of weeks ago, the government were like, we really need to rush this legislation through to the Children's Committee. Like, you need to accommodate us because this has to happen really quickly. Basically, a case was being taken against the Irish state because we're so bad on this stuff. And the Assisted Decision-Making Act is basically the entire purpose of this legislation is that we need to make a move away from presuming somebody does not have capacity to presuming people do have capacity. So I'm just going to give one example of what that might be. Somebody's in the bank and they're trying to take out their money and the bank go, they're really old. I don't know if they really know what they're doing. No, you can't take your money out. Like, that's a breach of somebody's rights. Just because you're old doesn't mean you can't be in charge of your own finances. The same if somebody's just presuming you can't make that decision because you have disability, which is what very often happens to people with disabilities. So Ireland was like, we desperately need to rush this trip through. And in doing that rushed job that we see so often in the House of the Oireachtas, they couldn't have gotten it more wrong. And there are very many examples that I could draw on, but I'll just give the one that me and Roderick were debating in the Dáil that day. And that is that in the Irish legislation, they've included this thing called the functional test of mental capacity. So that's this test that used to be carried out, I think, in other countries as well. And it's found to be discriminatory towards disabled people because one of the findings has been that, say, if you did the test, Tony, and then I did the test, we get a different result. People's biases come into it. And it's been found to be a complete breach of people's rights, particularly people with disabilities. So that you can't just do this test and say, you don't have capacity anymore. It's not okay. And in general, comment one of the UNCRPD, it explicitly says that. So I quoted that in the Dáil. And Roger came back and said, I accept your direct quote. If he did, he would include my amendment. But this vice chair of the UN Committee on the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities is like praising the Irish legislation. I'd like to bring that to the House and let them know and all of this kind of stuff. And then, of course, that vice chair was like, that's not what happened. Sent the letter to Roderick O'Gorman. And that's just one example of one amendment, one piece of legislation that we're dealing with in relation to disability. And I'm just going to give another example of something that was actually in that act that I think your listeners might find interesting, because this has no place in 2022. But, you know, you can make like a healthcare directive. So oftentimes that would happen if you were experiencing early signs of dementia. So you'd sort of make decisions about your own healthcare going forward whilst you have capacity. When you're kind of, you know, you feel like you want to make your decisions now. So those are always honoured, right? Unless, according to this legislation now, unless you're being detained under the Mental Health Act. So even though you made those decisions before you were detained under the Mental Health Act, they then disregard your decisions that you made when you had capacity just because you're detained under the Mental Health Act. And that could be because you're seeing a counsellor a lot for mental health issues.
There's so many reasons for that. And that could be the level of the opportunity for that to be abused is discriminatory when you think about it. Yeah. I mean, I can point to my own, you know, this is not anecdotal stuff. We know real life situations where these things can be abused, and we've seen it throughout for years. And unfortunately, it tends to lead to financial abuse and elder abuse and things like that as well when it comes 100%. To these. Yeah, and it's really cruel. But how do we get the people, the general public, to wake up to some of this stuff? Because quite often it doesn't matter if what you say is wrong. All that matters is that you say it with a bit of authority and make it sound plausible. I mean, we're filled with that now, whereby, you know, one of the most recent examples has to be the mortgage scheme with the Darragh O'Brien thing, called a game changer, because he called it a game changer. And yet the Irish government's own economic evaluation service said it's just going to put up the price of property.
But you can see that the general public on the whole have no faith in the government's ability to tackle the housing crisis now. And there's kind of all eyes on housing. And that's really good, because you saw then with the amendments that they were rushing through with regard to housing before recess kicked in, they actually end up removing one of them, because it was basically that midway through a process on board Planola could withdraw things they'd done before and they wouldn't be held to account for that. Mm. And that's great. That's because the public had their eye on it and the government knew they wouldn't get away with it. Imagine if we had the same situation for the Assisted Decision Making Act, because then you'd say, oh, well, if the minister, like, his only defence of this not accepting the amendment was what the vice chair of the UN Commission said, and then the vice chair of the UN Commission came out and said, I did not say that, and that's completely wrong. This legislation is flawed and a breach of people's rights. If there was more pressure behind that, he would have had to change it.
Yeah.
This is the unfortunate thing. And people going about their day-to-day lives can't be expected to be like watching the Children's Committee on a Tuesday afternoon. So it's a shame that we just don't have a better process, because even just to go back to like disability for a second, one of the things that the Dáil, it's so disingenuous inside there. Like, we put forward a motion just before recess because you kind of want to get things into the psyche of the government, because they make all the decisions for the budget over recess. And we go back in September, they'll be ultimately finished with that. So we were saying, look, cost of disability payment, €20 a week. So you get that if you're on domiciliary care allowance, invalidity pension, not just the disability allowance, for anybody, a carer. So the cost of disability is provided for, particularly in this cost of living crisis, and a €15 addition to the social welfare payment. The government passed the motion. Because we had like the Irish Wheelchair Society, the Disability Federation of Ireland, Mental Health Reform, Down Syndrome Cork, everybody up filling the gallery in Leinster House. So they let the motion pass. Mm. But of course they won't honour it.
Yeah.
So it's like the Dáil is so...
It's always explained. I saw recently whereby famously, and again, Mike Allen sat here beside me a few years ago when he talked about the Focus Amendment on, you know, allowing a house to be sold with the tenant in situ, and that they could just, you know, they could maintain their tenancy. And again, year after year, it's been put up. And this year, when it was put up, the government didn't oppose it. But that doesn't mean it's ever going to be enacted. Yet I saw it reported internationally that Ireland has done this game changing thing that will help tenants, that it won't be impacted. And because they were really good at getting out and saying, this is what we've done. And the Joe Public reads that, it's in the Guardian now in the UK, Ireland has done this thing. And you're going, no, we haven't. No, we bloody... I'm talking to John Harris myself. And I go, no, John, that's not what we've done here. We've allowed this thing to go through so it can just rot on a shelf now for the next whatever. And then that's the end of that, you know? And it's far too much. Can I... this sounds terrible. Is there anything that you think that's been really worthwhile in politics since you've gotten into the Dáil that's really shown you that, you know, not only do you think it's worthwhile, but you're coming back for more. You're gonna continue to fight as we come back in September.
100%, and like it can feel so frustrating and slow with things like that you know, we didn't get that 20-year increase. But like you do get it more in their minds. They are kind of feeling like they have to do something for people with disabilities now. So like it does have an impact. It's not the impact that I want. I want to be in government. I want to be in a left government where we can actually make bigger, broader decisions. And I suppose there's always the slow build towards that. And like when I say slow build, I hope, quick build, because I don't really have the patience to wait much longer. But it does. And like that, it's just there's, you know, you can't do it without everybody else. So I think a really good example of a time that I just realized how you can like really change things together. It sounds like such a cliche, but it was like when the Dole server crashed because the height of emails coming in about the Mother and Baby Homes Commission investigations report. Well, they changed their tack. So like we can affect change. It's not the kind of change I don't think that like we want. We want to be able to have a kind of bigger, broader policy change and, you know, invest in public services and all of that stuff. But for now, it's frustrating, but definitely like I don't feel like, oh, look, it's just so pointless, I'm going to leave politics. Mm. No. And like, because even like we need such a different attitude. Just to go back to what we talked about at the very beginning, the sectoral emission targets. I can't actually believe that all of our politicians basically in the country are not willing to say that we need to reduce emissions in the agriculture sector. Like, what's the alternative? Do they think that farmers should be more worried about climate action than climate change? I just can't believe that that's
I'll also go on record here and say that having read the piece by Daniel Murray in the Business Post during the week about the infighting that's going on amongst the government, Sinn Féin, you can't have your cake and eat it as well. We need you to take a position on this as well.
We were the only party on the record to say we want a 30% reduction in agriculture.
Well, I'm not here to applaud the social democrats, but I am here to say I get why you would do it politically as being in opposition, but not if you want to be part of a left progressive government. I don't see this. There's no time for that. No time for it, and I have no time for it personally. So that'll get me in trouble with a few people, and I do not care. Holly, very, very last thing. Do you think your own party has had, you know, we've seen the polls, it's been turbulent, it's been up and down. I think it's been looking a little bit better in the last most recent ones. Do you think I think your leaders are saying they want to almost treble your seats. I personally going to say, I think that's unrealistic, but however, you know, that's where you should be staking your ambitions. How do you feel about the future of the Social Democrats?
Oh, yeah, no, I'd say we treble our seats, all right. I mean, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And like, if I had a euro for every time somebody told me I had no hope of getting a seat here, I could fund all of those election campaigns around the country to get us those seats. Like, I think that, you know, there is a kind of a huge amount of people in Ireland who just haven't always had a more progressive option to vote for and don't necessarily feel that that is Sinn Féin for them. I think there's a huge space for us. And like, you see the amount that changes during an election. So like, even in that last election, it was like,
Do you remember the last election? We were told all of the debates were just going to be between Micheál and Leo, and no one was to talk. And like, even RT had to be dragged to the table to bring Mary Lou McDonald inside the tent. Exactly.
And just before that, and then like the absolute Sinn Féin wave, but they just lost all of their council seats 7 months previously. So it's just like, you just don't know what's going to happen. And the people decide how they're voting when the election's called. Not now. People, you know what I mean? That's what happens. We saw it. The polls went from Sinn Féin doing really badly to basically winning the election in the space of a 3-week election the last time. So you just never know what's going to happen. And I think people just want an alternative that's focused on the future and science-based policy. Like, there is huge, it's unbelievable that that's a space that needs to be filled in Irish politics, but we're here to fill it. And honestly, if that space wasn't there, we wouldn't exist and we'd all be happier, because I would rather be on the farm having a nice time than driving up and down to Dublin every week to kind of have those nonsense conversations with Roger O'Gorman and the Dáil, you know? But there is a huge space that we need, just like, we see it all over Europe. Social Democratic Party is going into government, and it is such a shame that we're, you know, 6 years old at the moment. I just think there was a vacuum that needed to be filled, because Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have let us down so consistently, and we weren't big enough there to fill it in that moment. And it's our job to build and be big enough to do that, but that's completely our ambition. And yeah, I can completely see why you'd say, look, it's unlikely, but Watch us.
I will indeed, and I'll gladly. I bake humble pie every Monday morning anyway, so that's part of my thing. You know, always willing to admit when I'm wrong, but I'm never wrong, like all good men. Holly Cairns, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy the little bit of sunshine, and we'll keep an eye on things as they develop over the summer. And I hope to talk to you very, very soon. Listen, folks, we're back. We have we've three podcasts scheduled tomorrow, including Killian Woods from the Business Post is coming back on to talk, funnily enough, about housing, because that's all we seem to be preoccupied with. We will talk to you all very, very soon. Take care. Bye bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.